is New Hampshire Public Radio.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Six states in the past 6 years have repealed their capital punishment laws, and here in New Hampshire, death penalty opponents hope the Granite State will make it 7-7. A week ago, at a packed House committee hearing on the death penalty, many spoke up against it, from the state's religious leaders to family members of murder victims to two former state attorneys general. But supporters also went to the microphones, including colleagues of slain Manchester police officer Michael Briggs, whose killer now sits on death row. Many expect the House will pass this repeal bill, as it has before. Governor Hassan has signaled she'd sign it. The Senate is considered more of the open question. Senators have backed repeal just once in 2000, and today it's uncertain which way its 24 members would vote. This hour on The Exchange, the death penalty debate returns to the Granite State. We begin the hour with Rennie Cushing. He's a longtime opponent of the death penalty. He's a Democratic representative from Hampton and executive director of Murder Victims Families for Human Rights. He sponsored this year's repeal bill. And Rennie Cushing, good to have you back on The Exchange. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and as I said, you've been involved with this for a long, long time, and the New Hampshire legislature has voted on this many times, yet here we still have capital punishment on the books. How do you feel this year is different, Representative Cushing?
Well, I think the signal was last fall, the last election, when both candidates for governors indicated that they were opposed to the death penalty, and that pretty much helped shift the debate a little. But what we've seen now, people have changed their mind over the years. The more that you learn about the death penalty, the more you come to understand it, it doesn't work. We've seen voices of people, libertarian voices, who realize that if you don't trust the government to collect taxes and plow snow, why would you want to give it the power to kill people? We've seen people from law enforcement who've seen the death penalty up close, people like former Attorney General Phil McLaughlin and Greg Smith, who just say that it just doesn't work and that it should be abolished in a state where we're really conscious of, stretching every dollar. It's a distraction. It shouldn't be a priority. We spend a lot of money pursuing the death penalty. At the same time, we have 120 unsolved homicide cases that cry out for justice. I think this time in the legislature, you're seeing a real thoughtful debate that's going on.
So new voices that you haven't heard from before, joining your side, if I could put it that way, Representative Cushing.
Yes, joining our side. I think that it's I've been amazed by the number of legislators from both parties who've come up to me and said that they think that now is the time that this experiment with capital punishment has failed and that we ought to move on.
Well, Governor Hassan has said she'd support repeal if it was not applied retroactively to Officer Briggs's killer, Michael Addison, now on death row, as I said. Does your bill address that issue? No, if not, how do you feel about that?
No, House Bill 1170 is prospective. It will apply to crimes that are committed after the time that the bill goes into effect. As you alluded to, there is one case in the state that's in the court system. This bill doesn't address it. We're just leaving that for the court system to figure out on its own. But we're trying to establish a going-forward policy here in the state.
What's the schedule for your bill in the House? And what's your prediction, Representative Cushing, about how the votes are going to go?
I expect the Criminal Justice Committee will be voting on the bill with a recommendation in the next couple weeks. And it should go to the floor of the House maybe by the end of February or the 1st of March. I think that we'll do well in the House. I don't like to handicap these things. I've been in the legislature long enough to know that you don't count the votes until they're cast. But I do know what's taking place in our communities, in our churches, in our restaurants, in our dinner tables. It's a discussion about capital punishment, whether it's time for New Hampshire to decide that it can live without the death penalty and move on. It's failed as a deterrent. People have come to realize that if the death penalty really was a deterrent, then Houston, Texas would be the safest place on the planet because it executes more people than any other jurisdiction.
Well, one more legislative question, if I could. Sure. Representative Cushing, you said you don't like to count your votes before they're hatched.
Right.
I appreciate that. We've all seen these things go who knows which way. But what about the Senate, Representative Cushing? I mean, it's said to be the big question mark this time around.
I know that there's thoughtful conversations that are taking place. This is an issue that it's not an easy vote. It's a vote in a way that you're casting not for, you know, not for a session, but you're casting. It's a vote that gets cast for history. And I think legislators in both the House and the Senate and on both parties have, you know, come to realize that, you know, at the end of this legislative session, there's a likelihood that capital punishment will be repealed, and ask the question of which side of history do you want to be on.
All right. Well, Rennie Cushing, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That's Representative Rennie Cushing. Again, he's a Democrat from Hampton, Executive Director of Murder Victims Families for Human Rights, and one of the chief sponsors of this year's bill to repeal the death penalty. That's what we're talking about today in The Exchange. We're looking at the 2014 death penalty debate at the State House, how it might unfold this time around. Of course, we want to hear from you. Do you feel the death penalty is an appropriate punishment or not? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. It's all one word. With me in studio, Arnie Alpert, New Hampshire Director for the American Friends Service Committee and a member of the board of the New Hampshire Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. And Arnie, good to see you. Welcome back.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us from Manchester is Nick Willard, Assistant Chief for the Manchester Police Department, which opposes a repeal to the death penalty in New Hampshire. And Assistant Chief Willard, thank you also for your time.
Good morning. For having me.
Well, on Officer Willard, you spoke at the hearing last week, and your testimony was widely quoted. What did you really want to make sure that House lawmakers heard from you? What was the big message that you were trying to convey to that panel?
Well, I think, well, first, I just wanted to comment that I don't think there's sides to this. I think we're all Americans with an opinion, and I think the debate is very important. So I don't want to use the word sides. I respect Rennie Cushing and his fervent desire to abolish the death penalty. I have a great deal of respect for him. So I want to say that. I don't feel like I'm on an opposite side of the representative. I'm actually honored to be in the debate with him. With that said, we do believe, the Manchester Police Department does believe, that if this is repealed, it will affect Officer Briggs' case and Michael Addison's situation. The court would have to give the abolishment of it some weight when they're deciding whether or not it's disproportionate to other sentences. So I do think it would have an effect, even though the bill is saying that it won't and the governor is saying it won't. It certainly will. It'll be up to the judges when they make that decision. And I believe they'll make the decision in favor of life without as opposed to death.
What about broadly, though? The Manchester Police Department, again, has come out against repeal. Other broader arguments, especially from your law enforcement perspective about the death penalty?
Well, we're not necessarily taking the position. We do feel the Manchester Police Department is weighing in only because it affects the person who is the only person in the state of New Hampshire who is currently on death row for the murder of one of our police officers. We do, in part of that dialogue, as we investigated the case and saw, you know, and looked into it more deeply, I guess, you know, if a person is going to go to life, going to prison for the rest of their life, why not kill a police officer on your way in? Because there are no ramifications for it. And as you go to prison, you become essentially a rock star. And we essentially saw this when Officer Dan Daugherty was shot 5 times by a gentleman here in Manchester. We got intelligence from inside the House of Corrections that other inmates wanted to put money in his canteen to basically show their appreciation for him for shooting a police officer. So, you know, what message are we going to send to people when they know they're doing life without parole and there is no stiffer penalty other than they're going to go to life anyways? They're going to do life anyways. So why not go into prison essentially as a rock star? I think that's something that's important to acknowledge.
So you feel like it protects police officers to some extent?
Well, I would hope. It wouldn't encourage somebody to shoot a police officer because they know they're going to a prison anyways for the rest of their lives.
Arnie Alpert, I want to bring you into this, too. It's often said that New Hampshire's death penalty statute isn't like that in other states. It's very narrowly drawn, only applies in very specific cases, such as the murder of a police officer, like Assistant Chief Willard is talking about, you know, that we're not using it willy-nilly in a variety of cases. Does that make the issue different here for you?
Well, I don't think so, Laura. I mean, I think the point is that Representative Cushing made is the death penalty basically doesn't work. It doesn't work for victims of crime and their loved ones. It doesn't work. It does not help public safety. It doesn't work for our fiscal situation, and it is not in keeping with our society's highest moral values.
Why doesn't it work for victims, Arnie? I'm curious.
Well, I mean,
about that.
I think that, you know, you look at a situation like because of all of the steps that the courts require for a death penalty prosecution to go forward, it takes forever. And every time that the trials take longer, and then the appeals take longer, and then the appeals of the appeals take longer. The man executed in Texas this morning, the crime he committed was in 1993 or 1994. That's 20 years ago. And all that time, as Detective Willard says, it's actually the person on death row becomes, in a sense, the rock star. I mean, that's kind of sad. We think of this right now as the Addison case. You know, we're always going to talk about that as the Addison case instead of thinking about Officer Briggs. You know, and if you instead have a situation in which a person is tried for murder with the potential of life without parole, which is the mandatory penalty for first-degree murder in the state of New Hampshire, the trial gets over more quickly. If the person is found guilty, he gets sent off to prison, and then he's going to spend the rest of his life there.
What about the protection that law enforcement feels this offers them? You know, obviously it's not going to stop every single bad actor, but that this offers at least some small measure of protection for those who are putting their lives on the line to protect the rest of us.
I think I understand from listening to people like Chief Willer talk about this overnight. I think I understand or start to understand how people might feel that way. But it's what I think is that if you look at what actually goes on, the death penalty doesn't protect anyone. It simply is a matter of how do we retaliate against someone who's taken the life of somebody that we treasure. And we need as a society to come up with better ways to do that. We need as a society to come up with better ways to prevent this type of intense violence.
We will talk very soon. More of our conversation about New Hampshire's death penalty debate coming up. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. President Obama delivers his State of the Union speech next Tuesday. You can hear it here on NHPR, as well as the Republican response immediately afterwards. Our coverage starts Tuesday night at 9 on NHPR and NHPR.org. More on another chapter in the death penalty debate on The Exchange, and at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, new chemical identified in West Virginia's Elk River spill. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and Goodwill Industries of Northern New England, seeking solutions at work and creating sustainable communities where nothing goes to waste, not a shirt, not a shoe, not a person, goodwillnne.org. From Harvest Capital, proud sponsor of the UNH Center for Family Business, helping coordinate the five steps of successful ownership transition, information at harvestcap.com. And Hollis Montessori School, providing authentic Montessori education for children ages 3 through 9th grade, winter admission open house Sunday, January 26, online at hollismontessori.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about the latest effort at the State House to repeal New Hampshire's death penalty. We invite you to join us. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. There you can also find a brief timeline of New Hampshire's death penalty and all the debates we've had about it over the years. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Nick Willard, Assistant Chief for the Manchester Police Department, and Arnie Alpert. He's a member of the board of the New Hampshire Coalition to abolish the death penalty. And I want to go back to you, if I could, Assistant Chief Willard, looking at the idea of what this does, not just for law enforcement, but for victims. Arnie Alpert feels like this doesn't work for victims. It just keeps dredging up these dreadful circumstances over and over again. I wonder what you think there.
I think the testimony by some of the victims' family was heart-wrenching to hear from Jeffrey Curley's father. That moved me. So I think for some victims, that is certainly the case, while for other victims, the opposite effect is occurring. The Briggs family, for example, the incessant attempts to repeal, you know, they have what Ani's talking about. They have the opposite. They see the state essentially as somewhat victimizing them. And I don't want to use that word because it's not necessarily accurate. But they feel they prepared themselves for the appeals. They prepared themselves for the longevity of this. But they did not prepare themselves for the state trying to change the game on them. And to them, I can only speak to that family of victims. This has been very daunting and very difficult for them. And I'd like to go back to something Ani said, because he said some things that I completely agree with. The cost is extraordinary. And I think being the lead investigator on Officer Briggs' murder investigation and trying to understand the nuances of the capital murder statute, it's always going to take unbelievable amount of resources and money. A first-degree murder case does as well, but nothing like a capital murder case. But I see it the other way. I think Michael Addison deserves nothing more than all the resources possible. And if that costs money, then I believe that that's very important that we go that way, because he deserves nothing less than all the appeals and all the resources and all the money to try to prevent himself from being put to death. I think it's very important.
You know, speaking of cost, I got an email this morning from someone named Raymond, who says he retired as a police chief in 2006 after serving in various capacities for 5 agencies for over 25 years, so a longtime law enforcement person. He says, while at one time I supported the death penalty, I've been in favor of abolishing the death penalty for quite some time now. Most of my reasons stem from my experience and knowledge of the shortcomings of the criminal justice system, as good as it is. Raymond says, first, the death penalty is not a deterrent. There exists no credible study to show the death penalty deters crime. Raymond says, Michael Addison himself murdered a police officer despite the death penalty statute. He also gets to the cost issue, though, since we're talking about that, gentlemen. Raymond says, it's been stated that the death penalty is needed to protect the police and the public. I actually believe it places our police and the public in greater danger. It diverts scarce resources for providing additional enhanced training for our police so that they may more safely deal with critical tactical incidents. What do you think about that? To you first, Assistant Chief Willard, and then Arnie, of course, I want to hear from you, too.
Yeah, I would love to talk to that. I mean, because I hear that from law enforcement officers who no longer support the death penalty, and that's fine. But to say that, let's say Addison's investigation, prosecution, and all that costs $5 million. I heard different numbers, but let's say it costs $5 million. Does that person who believes that, honestly believes the state is going to come up with $5 million out of the blue and put it towards training for police officers? It absolutely is not. These are numbers that are driven because of the investigation, because of the prosecution. This isn't money that is being diverted from something else and being moved around. This is money that is created because of the case. If we want to do away with the death penalty and then prosecution of a first-degree murder is, you know, $250,000, so be it. But they're not going to create $5 million to put into law enforcement training. And so that's an argument I just can't help but dismiss, because it really has no weight, in my view.
You want to jump in on just the broader cost argument?
Well, no, I mean, the state has spent more than $5 million already on this case. And it's just getting going. We're halfway through with the appeal at the state Supreme Court level, and the state is paying for the defense costs, it's paying for the prosecution costs, it's paying for the court costs. So the ticker is running on that. And I certainly understand Nick's point about, you know, how we make that money happen, go somewhere else.
But that $5 million wouldn't necessarily go to police.
Wouldn't necessarily, but it's certainly, again, it's up to us as a state, it's up to us as a community to decide how do we want our resources to be spent. And if we want our resources to be spent for measures that actually protect public safety, that actually make things better for police officers, that actually help out in our communities, we have the ability to do that.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen, and I've got a stack of emails here, too, that I'd like to share with you. But to our callers next, the number 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org, Facebook is NHPR Exchange, that's all one word, and Tom's calling in from Pinardville. Hi, Tom, you're on the air, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, your other guest, not the chief, but the other guy, I'm sorry, I forget his name.
Arnie Alpert.
Okay, yeah. He says, you know, society benefits from keeping these people alive, but isn't it costing more money to keep them in the system?
That's an issue that also comes up when we talk about cost, Arnie. What do you think? People say, gee, you know, three meals a day and a cell to sleep in and health care and so forth. Those costs have to add up, too.
Right. So that incarceration is expensive. And the point is that the cost of these trials and the fact that the appeals go on for so long means that, in fact, you know, most of the people who get sentenced to death don't even get executed. And a lot of the cases get overturned at some point in the appeal process if we look at the record around the country. So if you look at the full cost of the case, it is far more expensive to pursue a death penalty case than to pursue a case in which we have a mandatory sentence of life without parole. And that would be what would happen. If House Bill 1170 passes, all those cases which right now can be prosecuted as capital murder would instead be prosecuted as first-degree murder, which under New Hampshire law leads to a life without parole sentence, and it would actually save the state money.
This is Steve Willard. Yeah, go ahead. Weigh in on that, sure.
And I'm going to help Ani on this one, okay? Because I was just at a – because I think, you know, truth in our dialogue is vitally important. You know, we tend to slant facts and figures and all that stuff in order to best our argument. And I think the truth of what – we say is more important than anything else. And I was just with jail commissioner recently, and it's about $38,000 to house a prisoner per year. So over 20 years, it would be about $760,000. So it is cheaper to house a convict than it would be to execute him.
Okay.
I'll just say that perfectly up front.
Tom, thank you very much for calling in. It's an issue that definitely comes up. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us with your questions, comments, thoughts. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And gentlemen, as we look at the fate of this bill, House Bill 170, of course, many people will be thinking what might happen to this bill in the state Senate if it gets there. Joining us now is State Senator John Reagan. He's a Republican senator from Deerfield. He opposes a repeal of the death penalty. And Senator Reagan, thank you for being with us.
Good to speak to you again, Laura.
So we've been talking about House Bill 1170. How do you think your Senate colleagues are feeling about this?
I'm not a poll taker for the other senators. I can only speak for myself. I believe that it's a proper function of the state to protect the citizens, and I think that the carrying out of the death penalty is part of protecting citizens from harm by other citizens. That's the most basic thing that we permit the government to take our tax money and do, is to protect us from enemies, foreign and domestic.
How do you feel, Senator Reagan, that the death penalty protects citizens? Because I've got at least three or four emails here who feel like it is not a deterrent, that, you know, criminals are just going to go out and do it no matter what. They're not thinking about the consequences. I wonder what you think about that.
I think that if you polled all 300 million people in the United States, you'd have to find at least a million people who said, I really wanted to kill somebody, but I didn't because I didn't want to forfeit my life over it. Now, what you do about the crazy, mentally defective criminals that are running around and decide to kill a cop so they can carry that badge as a badge of honor in prison, that's just another failure to not carry out the death penalty. I mean, you're rewarding bad behavior.
How do you think, Senator Reagan, the death penalty conviction of Michael Addison for killing police officer Michael Briggs is affecting the debate, is affecting the way senators are feeling this year?
Well, it has to keep it high in your mind. I can't think of the number of representatives and senators that walk around wearing the 83 pin on their lapel. So they've made Officer Briggs, an object of admiration or a rallying point, or I guess they use it as a way to promote themselves with their constituents. But it just raises that. It raises that point that this is an affront to society. If you shoot a police officer, that's an affront to everybody in society because they are the people that we've entrusted with sticks and guns and cars, and we tell them to go out and protect us. So we give them that power to tell you and me to stop doing something. And then when they're murdered, that's an affront to everybody in the society.
What is the 83 pin on the lapel, Senator Reagan? I'm not familiar with that.
That was Officer Briggs' badge.
Sure. Okay. So it's a sign of support for him and his family.
Yes.
What's the one message, Senator Reagan, that you would like to convey to your fellow senators on this very difficult issue, especially to those senators who might be in favor of repeal? What would you like to say to them?
There's a false argument here, and the argument is that it's cheaper to keep them in prison than it is to execute them, which is just another admission that government can't do anything at a reasonable cost. If to take away the argument, you say, okay, it costs us $200,000 to prosecute and run all the appeals in a capital case, that takes away that argument. So it's a specious argument that just is another remark on the inability of government to operate properly.
So it shouldn't be dragged out this long and reap these incredible costs. Is that what you're saying, Senator Reagan?
It kind of demands maybe a national tribunal of however many judges that hear all the appeals on the death penalty, on capital cases that call for the death penalty. And if it takes them a month on each case or 40 hours or 100 hours or whatever, if that's what it costs to do, to see that justice is done, we should do it. It's a big industry for defense lawyers and everybody that gets involved with dragging the thing out. But it's really a waste of resources, and it doesn't do justice. It throws everybody into that lottery of, am I going to get the right judge in the right mood on the right day to hear this appeal? So there's a proper way to do that, and we can do that. We can do that legislatively.
You know, I have to ask you one last question, Senator Reagan. As you mentioned, the ineptitudes of government, and it shouldn't be dragged out this long and so forth, there is a concern on the anti-death penalty side that government makes mistakes, and, oh my gosh, what if we executed the wrong person? I mean, that would be terrible.
That would be terrible. Right. It calls for better police work, better review, a better appeals process.
Well, Senator Reagan, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Senator John Reagan. Again, he's a Republican from Deerfield, talking about what may happen to this death penalty repeal bill if it gets out of the House and into the Senate. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Assistant Chief Willard, Arnie Alpert, let's go right back to our callers. Bridget's calling from Keene. Hi, Bridget. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to ask the panelists if they could sort of comment on the racial bias in how the death penalty is applied. I think there's some pretty stark statistics on that.
Bridget, thank you very much for calling in. Arnie Alpert, this has come up in New Hampshire again. Michael Addison, who is African-American, was put on death row. John Brooks, I believe his name was, a white man who committed a crime that also fell under New Hampshire's death penalty statute, was not put on death row. So that racial element comes up a lot.
They were both charged with capital murder. The trials were taking place basically at the same time in adjoining counties. Michael Addison was found guilty and sentenced to death. John Brooks was found guilty and sentenced to life without parole. And his lawyer said afterwards, Mr. Brooks is not the kind of person that juries routinely kill in this country. And the fact is that is a true statement. The Death Penalty Information Center says that there's an overwhelming body of evidence that race plays a decisive role in the question of who lives and dies by execution in this country. People who kill white people are more likely to get the death penalty than people who kill black people, and black people who kill are more likely to get the death penalty than white people who kill. And I'm not I have no ability to peer into the hearts or the souls of the people who were on those two juries, but it is highly disturbing that what we've seen in New Hampshire in these two cases matches up with this pattern that we've seen all over the country.
And Assistant Chief Willett, I want to give you a chance to jump in on that, too. The racial concern does come up.
Well, I investigated the Michael Briggs homicide, and I actually polygraphed one of the killers in the Brooks investigation. So I know both of these cases very well. Most importantly, I'm deeply troubled by the suggestion that the reason for different outcomes in Addison and Brooks cases was based on race. Each man's criminal history alone justified the different outcomes. For instance, Addison had fired a gun at point-blank range at another boy in an attempt to kill him, but the gun jammed. While he was awaiting trial for that, as a youth, he stabbed a boy five times to steal his hat. He kidnapped another man over a drug debt. He threatened to kill his mother. He robbed a patron at a store at knife point. He robbed a clerk of a convenience store at gunpoint. He and an accomplice fired rounds into an occupied building in which children were inside. He bragged about popping a cop if they tried to arrest him. He committed many of these offenses while he was on parole and probation. And he did all of these things before he shot and killed Officer Michael Briggs because he didn't want to go to jail. And then he confessed to the murder. Mr. Brooks had no criminal record at all, and he denied his involvement in that case from the beginning until the end and to this day. And the state of New Hampshire, it shows us that the statute works. And those people who do nothing but focus on race without the case facts, I find it troubling. So to imply that the different outcomes are based on race without a deep examination of the facts of each case suggests that none of us evaluate on the merit or the lack thereof of the human without focusing on the color of his or her skin. That suggestion I find profoundly troubling because it suggests we as Americans cannot make decisions without regard to race, and that race must necessarily be drive the different outcomes when two men of different race are treated differently. I just find it troubling that it's particularly here in New Hampshire, when we should know these case facts, we constantly draw a correlation between a white rich man and a poor black man. It's disingenuous, and we're better people than that here in New Hampshire.
Bridget, thank you for that call. And after a short break, we'll take a lot more of your calls, 1-800-892-6477. We'll get through some of these emails too, gentlemen. You can continue to email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. More conversation in just a minute.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a new chemical identified in the West Virginia spill, an update on that event, and safeguarding America's water supply. Then how office design affects workers, business, and the bottom line. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from the Woodlands at Lebanon, New Hampshire, a senior independent living community in the Upper Valley. Information at thewoodlandsnh.org. And Vineyard Brands, importers of goats to Rome, wines from the Pearl Valley of South Africa, available at New Hampshire State Liquor Stores, goatstorome.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Today in The Exchange, we're discussing New Hampshire's death penalty and the latest attempt to repeal it. There's a House bill that we've been looking at. We've been discussing the ins and outs of that and hearing from you at 1-800-892-6477 or by email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. Our guests are Arnie Alpert. He's on the board of the New Hampshire Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. He's New Hampshire Director for the American Friends Service Committee. Also with us, Nick Willett, Assistant Chief for the Manchester Police Department. And all of you, I'd like to get through a couple more of these comments from our listeners. And I want to thank everybody for jumping in on this conversation. It's good to hear from so many of you. This is Joe in Concord. He says, there is no such thing as, quote, life without parole. If a person is alive in prison, they can get out or be released. They can also still kill people in prison. Joe also says, an executed murderer is guaranteed not to kill ever again. It is not about deterrence. We put them down because they are dangerous. much like a rabid dog. Could you address, Arnie, Joe's first comment especially? There is a skepticism among some folks that life without parole doesn't really mean life without parole, that, you know, memories are short, 20, 30 years down the line, some bad person might be released.
Representative Cushing asked the Legislative Research Office to look into that question, and what they found was that everyone who has been sentenced to life without parole in New Hampshire has, in fact, been serving life. No one has been released from prison who was serving life without parole.
No one?
No one.
So that is a fear, but it's not a justified fear. Is that what you're saying?
At this time, not in New Hampshire.
Yeah. Is it because people hear about other cases elsewhere? Because that impression is strong.
Yeah, that may be a strong impression. But right now in New Hampshire, life without parole means life without parole.
And another one to you, Arnie. Assistant Chief Willard said at the beginning of the program, he was concerned that if repeal does happen here in New Hampshire, despite all protests to the contrary, it will affect the case concerning the killer of his former partner, Officer Briggs. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I mean, this is a case, again, that the appeals could go on. Recently, the Attorney General's office was talking about how overwhelmed they are with all the different things that are on them. And, you know, think about, you know, Jim Reams and all these other cases that are happening and what's going on in Nashville. I mean, all this stuff. They've got a ton of stuff to deal with there. And they think that this case could go on another 13 to 15 years. So what can happen over 13 to 15 years, I'm not going to try to predict. But I do think that our judicial system does not need that type of process, and that we, New Hampshire, can live without the death penalty, and that our judicial system and our Attorney General's office will work much better without it.
Here's an email that came in from the Reverend Robert Hirschfeld, and he's the new bishop of the Episcopal Diocese here in New Hampshire. And Assistant Chief Willard, I'd love your thoughts on this. Bishop Hirschfeld says, repealing the death penalty is a way for the state to counteract and push back against the culture of violence. And I know that's a concern for you, Assistant Chief Willard. He says, wherever the death penalty is administered by the state, the dignity of all citizens is diminished. To ask citizens to participate in the administration of the death sentence through our taxes is complicit silence, is to make even more virulent the moral and spiritual contamination by which violence distorts the soul of our state and our nation. And I know, Assistant Chief Willard, that you are concerned about the culture of violence, increasing violence in your city. I wonder what you think about Bishop Hirschfeld's feelings there.
Well, I don't necessarily take the correlation of execution to street-level violence quite the way I think he is. He's delivering it. What I do not like, and I hope it's okay to say this, but my own personal opinion is what one of you read earlier about, you know, that phrase, putting somebody down. You know, I think how people approach, particularly people that are pro-death penalty, for lack of a better word, when they speak out as if Michael Addison or anybody on death row is less than human and they need to be put down like rabid animals, I just find that so troubling, because it's such an important issue. And the dialogue is very important, but Michael Addison is a human being. And what we are talking about is taking that human being's life. And the enormity of that is never lost on me, and it shouldn't be lost on these people that make comments like that. And I don't mean to call that gentleman out, but I hear it a lot, and sometimes I hear it within my own profession, and it bothers me deeply. So on some levels, I believe in what the bishop is saying. I also don't think that hatred and forgiveness are tied together. I think if you harbor hate, you have not forgiven. That does not mean you can't hold somebody accountable. As long as it is done without hate and vengeance, I believe it is just. And that's just my own personal view. My position as a Manchester police officer, and you had asked Ani earlier, the judges have to consider the repeal. They have to. I think they should. I think it's a very important thing that they should. If the will of the people is no death penalty, then Michael Addison most likely won't be put to death.
Let's take another call if we could. Thank you for that email, Bishop Hirschfeld, and for all the emails that have come in. We'll get to a few more in just a minute, but let's go to Todd. Go ahead, Todd, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Quick thought. Everybody, I get very upset when people talk about that the death penalty does not deter crime, because that's a false argument, because neither does imprisonment. we have the highest imprisonment rates in the Western world, and we have the highest crime rate. So I just take that off the table. It's about punishment. And you either believe that there are certain crimes that are heinous enough, like shooting up a school full of children, that that person needs to be put to death, or you believe that, no, that person should be kept under the state's care for the rest of their natural life. And that's what it comes down to.
So never mind the deterrent argument, Todd. That's not really, shouldn't be an issue.
Well, then we should be arguing that prison doesn't work.
Okay. Todd, thanks for calling in. Arnie Alpert, I'll throw that one to you.
Well, we could get into that at another time, Laura. That's a great discussion to have. I mean, I didn't think that. So one of the questions is, does the risk of execution deter homicide more than the risk of spending the rest of your life in prison? And what all the statistical studies show is that there is no evidence to show that there is a deterrent effect.
So you're agreeing with Todd there. Take deterrent off the table.
But so that even if we talk about punishment, this question comes back to, okay, so which are the, and if you put aside a moral argument that says society should not kill, we should not be involved in the premeditated killing, which is what the death penalty is, we should look, we still have this question of what are the crimes that are so heinous that they rise to that level that we should take away the person's life. And then we are into a moral and legal and procedural conundrum that I don't think we have the wisdom to solve. He mentioned mass killing of children. Right now, mass killing of children in a school would not be a capital crime in New Hampshire.
Because of the way our statute is written.
So this idea that some crimes are so heinous. So I would say from the perspective of my family, the murder of my own grandfather was, you know, who a robber in a store beat him over the head with a claw hammer. All right. That was a horribly heinous crime. The murder of children is a heinous crime. The murder of a police officer is a heinous crime. The murder of a nurse, the murder of your own wife. You know, what could be more heinous? But half of the murders that take place in our state are people murdering their former or current intimate partners. I mean, what could be more heinous than that? But that's not a capital crime. How do we decide that? I don't think we can. I think the only decision that we can make as a society is to say we need to leave this behind. We need to move beyond it. The death penalty is a distraction from what helps keep us safe, from what honors our loved ones, and what knits us together as a society. Let's move on and let's look at the reality of the issues that we're facing in this society.
Assistant Chief Willett, I can tell you want to jump in there. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was actually just clearing my throat, but there are some aspects of what Ani is saying I couldn't agree more with. There are some crimes that are unbelievably heinous that I have investigated personally. The murder of a 26-year-old mother, a 4-year-old daughter, and a 2-year-old son all in the same room where they were sexually assaulted post-mortem. To me, that is the most egregious thing I have ever experienced, more so than Officer Briggs. Officer Briggs died in dignity and honor, serving his community, willing to give his life for the betterment of that community. He actually died honorably. There is nothing honorable about the death of a 2-year-old. Yet, I wouldn't necessarily advocate for expansion of the death penalty either. So I think that's probably an equally important debate. To the gentleman's issue about deterrence, I think capital punishment is likely to deter more than other punishments because people fear death more than anything else. So whenever people fear the most, would most likely deter the most. I mean, that's a common sense. I heard that from a college professor. But I did find investigating Officer Briggs' case, every single person, witnesses, complicit people that were involved, cohorts, every single one of them knew the gravity of that investigation, and they all recognized it was a death penalty case. And it was a thread that went through the entire investigation, which made it what it was, because everybody understood this is a death penalty case, and I had better cooperate with the investigation because this is bigger than me. Everybody understood that, and I think that's my own little anecdotal evidence that it does have some sort of an effect than any other regular case.
Well, here's an email from Sean in Manchester who kind of agrees with what you just said, Assistant Chief Willard. He says, I support the death penalty in a very limited scope, when we talked earlier about how New Hampshire's law is limited, because the greatest crime is murdering someone and it deserves the greatest penalty. Sean says, no one can prove that the death penalty does not work as a deterrent because it is impossible to know how many murders were not committed. So that's kind of following up on what you said, Assistant Chief Willard. But here's another one from Peter, who says, and again, this gets to the narrowly drawn statute here in New Hampshire that only has, you know, 10 or so types of murders that are eligible for the death penalty. Peter says, why is the life of a policeman more valuable than anyone else? All murder is heinous. Peter says, life without parole gets my vote. Arnie, you addressed that a minute ago. You know, all murders are heinous. All murders are terrible for the victims' families. How do we choose? I wonder what you think, Assistant Chief Willard, about this idea that some murders are, I hate to use the word eligible, but that's how they say it, eligible for capital punishment and some are not. Especially to Peter's point, why is the life of a policeman more valuable than anybody else?
Well, I don't think the life of a police officer is more valuable than anybody else, actually. I think the role that he plays in our society, we place a value on that. The community does that by saying we are asking you to go into the worst of situations while we sit back. That doesn't mean the everyday citizen does not, but we're asking a police officer to do that by his very profession. We go places that people would otherwise not go. When there is a mall shooter and he's firing rounds while everybody else is running away, police officers are running towards the rounds. And what we're saying, what society is saying with the death penalty, essentially, for a police officer, isn't because a police officer is better than a store clerk. What they're saying is that we value your commitment to your community and that you're willing to give your life for it. And from that value, we're going to protect you by telling the person that kills you they're going to face the highest possible sentence possible. And I hear that a lot where people say, well, why is a police officer more special than me? They're not saying we're more special. Society is saying we value what you're willing to do for us, and we're going to support you by telling people that would take your life otherwise that they're going to face the stiffest penalty possible, which is death.
Yeah, Arnie, do you want to jump in on that?
I want
to
find other ways to show police officers that we value them. I want to find ways to show firefighters that we value them. I want to show school teachers, people who, you know, it's kind of scary, Laura, to think that right now, you know, you're taking a risk by being a school teacher or being a mail carrier. I mean, there's a lot of things, working in an emergency room, being an EMT. We need to find ways to show people who are taking risks for the society, including and especially police officers, that we honor them, that we support them, and that we want to try to protect them to the extent that we can. The death penalty does not do that. We can live without it.
I want to ask both of you a question that I asked State Representative Rennie Cushing at the beginning of the show. I think to you first, Assistant Chief Willard. Again, New Hampshire's gone around and around on this issue over the many years that I've been doing this program, at least. Does this year feel different, Assistant Chief Willard? What do you think?
It does feel different. I don't really know why. It just, I think last year they made it more robust. I think they included home invasion. The state of New Hampshire always kind of confounds me, to be quite frank with you. This year it feels different. I think that this has legs. I think the governor's announcement that she wouldn't veto it is probably going to carry hold some sway with a lot of people. The reason the Manchester Police Department is weighing in, it's only because we have that case, and we do think it would have an effect. But whatever the outcome, so be it. I don't necessarily believe that we're going to abolish the death penalty, except for the one person that's on death row. We're going to go ahead and execute him. I'm not even just me as a citizen would think that that's wrong. So why wouldn't a judge who he's charged with making those decisions from a legal standpoint come to the same conclusion? I think the death penalty is all or nothing, as it should be. And if it's abolished, then so be it.
Given the role that you've talked about that police officers play to protect citizens, putting their lives on the line, as you said, how are you going to feel if it is repealed?
I will accept what our lawmakers and government says. I mean, that's what I do. I mean, that's the most important thing. I abide by the dictates of my government. This case is a perfect example of that. Regardless of all the investigators and prosecutors' personal belief in the death penalty, it's our duty to fulfill our obligation to society as the law describes. And I think that's something that's probably lost in all of this. We don't have this fervent desire to execute Michael Addison. We have a duty to our profession and to what the law states, and that's what we're doing. We're fulfilling our duty. So I don't think, you know, it didn't deter this gentleman recently the threat of the death penalty by shooting Officer Dan Daugherty five times at point-blank range. So I'm not naive enough to think that people aren't going to try to kill police officers with the death penalty on the books. The question is what will we as a profession collectively feel about government's appreciation of us? But when I hear somebody like Ani say the things that he said, I can appreciate that. So I think what probably will need to be will happen at some point will be that dialogue with law enforcement, if it is repealed, to like Ani said, show them that we do value them on some level.
Okay.
And I just think that would be important.
Arnie, what do you think about this year? Again, you don't like to count your votes before they're hatched, but
things are moving in the direction. The shift of people like former Attorney Generals Phil McLaughlin and Greg Smith shows that people are moving away from the death penalty. The fact that John Breckinridge, Michael Briggs' partner, who was with him in the alley, has gone through a spiritual transformation, spoken out publicly for repeal. Richard O'Leary, another former deputy chief in Manchester, testified for repeal. Libertarians, right-to-lifers, liberal Democrats are working together at the State House right now to repeal the death penalty. And if your listeners and everybody pays attention, lets their legislators know what they think, perhaps this will be the year.
Okay, well, tough conversation. I really, really appreciate both of you joining me. Arnie Alpert, thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And Assistant Chief Willard, thank you also for your time. Deeply appreciated. Sure.
Thank you.
I also appreciate all of you who called in, sent emails, Facebook comments. The conversation is already continuing on our Facebook page, NHPR, all one word. So if you didn't get in this morning, you can get in there. And thanks a lot for your thoughts. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. The State House is ablaze with debates ranging from gun control to animal cruelty. In politics, Joe Kenney wins the Republican nomination in the race to fill Ray Burton's executive council seat. And scrutiny over a state representative's run-in with some docs expands to include a police commissioner. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where we get support from UR members and from Dana-Farber, New Hampshire Oncology, Hematology, and Londonderry, offering consultations with disease specialists from Dana-Farber in Boston, danafarber.org/Londonderry. And Plymouth State University, home of the National Writing Project in New Hampshire, accepting applications for its Summer Institute for Teachers of Writing, plymouth.edu/graduate.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVU, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, at 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
Good morning. It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. West Virginians were hit with more troubling news about their water supply this week. Freedom Industries revealed a second chemical had leaked from its storage tank in the January 9th spill that affected 300,000 people. State